Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
It is time for another installment of Brilliant Boston, where we bring you some of the most popular classes at the region's universities. Last time, we heard from a Wellesley professor about a class on philosophy and witchcraft. Sticking with the season, here's what we have for you today.
It's alive! Oh, it's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
It was alive. Monsters, of course. That's Colin Clive there as Dr. Frankenstein in the 1931 classic about his monster. You know the story. But did you know that the stories we tell ourselves about monsters reflect what we're most afraid of in real life? So with Frankenstein, for example, technology. Todd Avery is a professor at UMass Lowell, and he teaches monsters, apes, and nightmares, and joins us for this latest edition of Brilliant Boston. Todd, welcome.
Tatiana, thank you very much.
You were kind of cracking up during that sound.
I love that. It's one of the fantastic scenes in all of movies.
And it was alive, and that means a lot, right? You pick Frankenstein as part of this course because there's so much packed into it, Todd.
Yeah, I do. Originally, this course was called Frankenstein's Monsters, and that evolved over time. But it began with a focus on Frankenstein, which is a novel that I actually wrote my undergraduate English thesis on. Then I went to graduate school fully intending to study Mary Shelley more and the romantic.
Who wrote Frankenstein for people. Yeah.
Exactly. And somehow I ended up getting sucked into a 19th century vortex and spit out on the other end. So I really specialized in late 19th century and early 20th century literature. But I've always been fascinated by Frankenstein, and one of the reasons is that it really it creates it's the beginning of science fiction. So we can think of Mary Shelley as the mother of science fiction. For a long time, the fathers of science fiction were often referred to from the late 19th century, included H.G. Wells, slightly earlier, Jules Verne, the French writer. But Mary Shelley was really the mother of science fiction, and she gave us a fundamental modern myth in the story of the mad scientist who wants to play God, using modern science and technology, but fails to imagine the potential negative consequences of his act.
All right, so I'm going to use that thrill right there, fails to imagine the consequences of his act, to bring in another story that you use in your class. Here's a little bit of tape.
I don't think you're giving us our due credit. Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think if they should.
Of course, that's Jurassic Park, 1993. You're hearing Richard Attenborough as John Hammond, Jeff Goldblum as Ian Malcolm, who's the chaos theory expert of now, sort of pop culture legend. The book written by Michael Crichton, another set of monsters, although monsters that we also love, with a warning about our relationship with technology.
You beat me to that quote,
oh,
too.
No.
I was going to quote that wonderful line from Ian Malcolm. Jurassic Park. I mean, one of the things that we love about Jurassic Park is it has dinosaurs. It's just so cool, right? But Jurassic Park is a fascinating novel. I think it's probably Michael Crichton's best novel. But regardless of that, it's a fascinating novel in how it can be seen as one of Mary Shelley's sort of hideous progeny. That's the way she described her own book. She described Frankenstein as her hideous progeny, her monstrous child. But in creating that hideous progeny, she set a form, like I said, for a lot of science fiction to come. And Michael Crichton is clearly aware of the history of science fiction as a particular kind of science fiction that's a cautionary tale. And he's working sort of just right in that Frankenstein line, which, you know, you go back to Frankenstein, we're talking about a scientist who harnesses the latest in electrical and other scientific, chemical, mathematical, physical developments.
Of that time.
Of that time. Galvanic batteries, for instance, were kind of all the rage during the time when Mary Shelley was writing her story. And so electricity was always a key component of it. But Mary Shelley created this story about essentially the do not go into that cave, that there's certain kinds of illicit knowledge, things that we're not meant to know. And she also created the idea of the scientist as the person who is illicitly kind of manipulating the natural world.
Supplanting God.
Supplanting God. Victor Frankenstein, at one key moment in recounting his story, says that wealth was an inferior object, but what glory would attend the discovery if I could banish disease from the human frame and render man invulnerable to any but a violent death? And the way he's going to do this is to create a new kind of species. Mm-hmm. And he says, a new species would bless me. He uses this religious language. A new species would bless me as its creator and source. And so Victor Frankenstein really sees himself as playing God. Now, if you take the Frankenstein story, and this, I should say the subtitle of Frankenstein is The Modern Prometheus. Mm-hmm. So Mary Shelley is referring back to the myth of Prometheus, who does two things. He actually is a creator titan who comes to Earth and literally molds and shapes human beings out of the earth and breathes life into us.
And I know the second thing he does.
Yes.
He steals fire from the gods.
He steals fire from the gods. So he's a creator. He also wants to be a benefactor. He wants to help humanity. Using technology, using by giving us fire, and he pays a dear price for it.
Which is the gods punish him by forcing him to. Is he the one that's chained to a rock?
Chained to a mountain.
And every day a bird comes and eats out his internal organs, and then it repeats the next day. It's pretty bad.
It's very, very bad. Can't imagine.
Yeah. All right. So there's a whole bunch of threads I want to pick up on there. So finish that thought, and let me jump into a couple of these threads.
Okay. So I'll do it very, very quickly. If you take Frankenstein. Add The Island of Dr. Moreau, the 1896 novel by H.G. Wells, which also involves a mad scientist trying to sort of playing God and seeing himself as a Prometheus plasticator, a shaper, a molder, a sculptor.
He makes strange creatures.
He makes strange creatures, and he says that his goal was to discover. His lifelong scientific goal is to discover the extreme limits of plasticity in a living shape. Hmm. But where Dr. Moreau does his work is on an island off the coast of South America. And so you can see where I'm going with this. And those of you who know Jurassic Park know where I'm going with this. If you take Frankenstein and then add the island of Dr. Moreau and then throw in late 20th century genetic engineering and the coolest creatures ever, dinosaurs, you end up with Jurassic Park. Off the coast of South America on an island.
Yeah.
All involving scientists doing illicit things. You'd have to, for Jurassic Park, you'd also have to throw in the economic motive of theme park profit.
So we're speaking with Todd Avery, who's a professor at UMass Lowell. This is our Brilliant Boston segment where we bring you one of the most popular classes at one of our area universities, and his is Monsters, Apes, and Nightmares, which tells us the stories that we tell ourselves are really about the things we fear most. So there are a couple of things I want to ask here. One, as you've pointed out, as the technology changes, electricity versus genetic engineering for genetic manipulation, the type of monster changes, right? A new species made out of electricity in Frankenstein, an old species brought back to life using genetic engineering in Jurassic Park. We are a hub of technology here. Yep. I mean, I can think of the number of conversations just in the last 3 months I've had about the science that's happening in Kendall Square. Do we tell any of the stories here? You know, we're bringing forth the things that make people want to tell monster stories. Does this region tell the monster stories too? Or are these authors from other places? You know, I'm curious about that.
There's a wonderful young adult novel that tells a kind of monster story published back around 2002, I think it was, by M.T. Anderson, who lives in Cambridge and is a National Book Award winner. He wrote a novel called Feed, which is a futuristic, a dystopian novel in which all of the characters are implanted with a chip into their brain. And what that enables, so that's the feed, what it enables is them to receive messages from the feed net 24/7.
Oh, man.
And so this is
it's a little 1984 almost.
It is a little bit 1984, but it's also the age of social media.
Yeah.
And he also includes nanotechnology, for instance. And I know there's a lot of nanotechnology research happening here. I think there's still a collaboration between Northeastern and UMass Lowell and the University of New Hampshire on this. So, yes, Anderson writes this novel as, again, a kind of a cautionary tale about how profit motive can sort of, in a sense, hijack potentially beneficial scientific developments. And also, he's writing a kind of critique of emergent social media.
So you feel there's no accident, as I understand it, that this is a course that can be taught at UMass Lowell specifically. And this is fascinating.
Yeah.
Tell this.
Yeah. So the title of the course, Monsters, Apes, and Nightmares, which forms a wonderful acronym, MAN. I know it's a little gender specific, but I'll work on that. The title is really the kind of rhetorical sugarcoating on the intellectual pill of the course. It's the catch. It's the hook. What the class really is an opportunity for students from all disciplines and majors to read literary representations and dramatizations of science and technology. Mm. And they do this, or I ask them to do this as a way, so to speak, of bridging the two cultures,
the famous humanities two and cultures the science and technology.
Yes, exactly, of the humanities and the sciences that the British scientist and novelist C.P. Snow wrote about 60 years ago in his book, The Two Cultures and the Scientific Revolution. And so, I mean, the thing about courses is that they're all taught, they all happen in a particular place and at a particular time. And obviously, the time is the present. And I teach this course. I teach this course online, but I also teach it on ground or in an earthbound format at UMass Lowell. And UMass Lowell, geographically, in terms of place, is fascinating because it is a perfect geographical metaphor. The campus itself, a perfect geographical metaphor of the two cultures. We have two campuses. Well, one campus now, but one of them began in the 1890s. It was founded as the Lowell Technological Institute, mm-hmm. and its purpose was to train engineers to run the mills in Lowell and to forward the industrial, as some people called it, revolution. The other campus started as the Lowell Normal School, which was a teaching school for young women to go and learn how to teach the growing numbers of immigrant children and children migrating in from the countryside and children of the people working in the mills and contributing to the overall economy of Lowell. So over time, UMass Lowell has been through different permutations, but now it's UMass Lowell. We have two campuses connected by two physical bridges, but I thought maybe a course that invited students to, so to speak, bridge the two cultures by reading literature about science and by asking them also to bring their own disciplinary expertise to bear on some pressing, urgent questions.
And it sounds like you're doing that. All right. That is Todd Avery, professor at UMass Lowell, instructor of the popular class Monsters, Apes, and Nightmares. It's our latest installation of Brilliant Boston. Next month's installment, we'll talk all about music made out of brain waves. Todd, thank you so much for joining us.
Tiziana, thank you so much. And could I also just very, very briefly give a shout out to both my online and on-ground students, many of whom I think are listening today. They're the reason for this class.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for listening.